This American Life from Ira Glass. Each week on a program, of course, we choose a theme, bring you different kinds of stories on that theme. Today's show, once more with feeling, stories of people who decide to rethink the way they've been doing things or try to get others to do that. We've arrived at Act 3 of our program. Act 3, you had one job. So we're going to end today's show with a machine that always does things the same way because machines are designed and programmed to always do things the same way. This is a piece of fiction from somebody who's a journalist and a TV writer named Scott Brown. His story was read for us by actor Jeremy Shamos.
I have one arm because my job only takes one arm to do, and I only have one job. I like my job so much. The other officers at Precinct 9 don't know I like it. They don't know I like anything. I like them, though, especially my operator, Officer Brian Parise, whom the other officers call Gamergate, Indoor Kid, and Tech Support, and whom I call Brian, but not out loud, because I can only say three things out loud.
Stay back 1,000 feet. Follow officers' instructions. You are in the blast zone.
When I'm not doing my job, which is most of the time, I'm in the break room. I'm supposed to be in the vehicle bay, but someone thought it would be funny to put me in the break room next to the coffee machine, wearing a Carolina Panthers hat. The hat is to differentiate me from the coffee machine. That's a joke. I am nothing like the coffee machine. It weighs 9 pounds. I weigh 900. It has rubber nubs for feet and doesn't move. I have 6 prehensile AT treads and can travel up to 18 miles per hour. And I have a hat. My arm's been outstretched so I can give high fives and handshakes. Officers love those. In exchange, they give me a, "What up, Miles?" or a, "Peace out, Miles." I'm Miles. And I'm very good at handshakes. Just okay at high fives. Getting better at fist bumps. I can live with the hat. I know the hat looks stupid because my eye is better than the officers know, and because I have limited learning, a software upgrade only Brian knows about, and because there's a mirror in the break room. But mostly, I just like my job. It's simple. There's unsecured ordnance, what Brian calls a bomb. I come between the unsecured ordnance and the people. Either 1, I neutralize the ordnance, or 2, I don't stop the ordnance and I'm superficially damaged, or 3, I intentionally detonate the ordnance and I'm superficially damaged. I'm designed to be superficially damaged. In all 3 scenarios, nobody gets hurt. That's the idea. Last summer, there was an oily package addressed to those in charge, left outside a community health center. As I was unloaded from my trailer, I saw a girl, around 6, entering the blast zone with a jump rope. She had tight black braids and straight rows that ended in bright blue beads with tiny cartoon fish on them. No one else noticed her. Without waiting for Brian, my operator, I decided to roll toward the girl, screaming,
"You are in the blast zone!"
The girl urinated on herself and exited the blast zone, emotionally. I was very pleased. No one was hurt. The oily package was full of large, raw beef hearts. Its owner was not located. Brian told his commanding officer that he'd sent me rolling toward the girl, himself. After that, Brian started talking to me when no one's around. No one's around Brian a lot. Brian is not popular. People don't like him. He isn't a cop's cop. Just my cop. Which is fine. There's a website Brian likes called You Had One Job, which collects and curates visual evidence of mistakes made in the process of completing what appear to be relatively simple tasks. For example, an image of a stop sign painted SOTP. Over the image, someone had superimposed in block type, "You had one job." I'm not sure how I feel about "You had one job." Once I saw a picture of another mobile intermediary legate, extreme situations explosive ordnance disposal unit. The unit was on its side, wheels spinning in the air. It had tipped over on a gentle slope while approaching a suspicious suitcase in a park playground. "You had one job" was written over it in block type. Then I made the mistake of reading the comments. They were not kind. Robo-fail. Suktron 5000. "This is not the droid you're looking for." Brian says comments are just people trying to be funny. I struggle with funny. A call comes in. This happens. Within 30 seconds, it's clear that this will be one of the 3 times a year on average that I get to do my job. I'm rolled into my sealed container. I travel in darkness with Brian in the van by my side. I'm still wearing the stupid hat. The call is on West Pettigrew Street. My sealed container opens, light streams in, and my eye takes 2.5 seconds to adjust. Temperature is 91 degrees Fahrenheit. Humidity is 84%. There's a police officer, Caucasian male, lying on the sidewalk in front of a vegan bake shop. He has a conclusive head wound. "Damn," says Brian. The officer was young, 27, Caucasian, a father. The shooter is 36. His name is Owen Jackson, also a father. He's estranged from his family, with many, many Facebook posts with political content. The suspect is upstairs in his apartment. His apartment is full of explosives, he tells the negotiator on the phone. Underneath his apartment is the vegan bake shop, which is being evacuated. Next to the vegan bake shop is a publicly subsidized dialysis center full of people with mobility problems. It will take an hour to evacuate. Upstairs, Mr. Owen Jackson has bricked up the other entrance and the windows with cinder blocks he's filled with quickrete. Sonar readings suggest bad outcomes for SWAT. They would enter single file, the worst option. Mr. Owen Jackson knows this. He tells the negotiator he's well-positioned to fatally wound or otherwise injure several officers with a high-caliber, fully automatic military weapon, then trigger his charges when other options are exhausted. But there's something else we know. Mr. Owen Jackson is almost certainly lying about the explosives in his apartment. The dogs don't think he has any, and the dogs are usually right. The media trucks arrive. Brian takes off my Carolina Panthers hat. "Okay, Miles," Brian says. "Showtime." I don't understand showtime. It's something Brian says when he's nervous. I just want to do my job. Just out of earshot, the negotiator and Brian's commanding officer are talking to Brian. Voices are raised. Meanwhile, an officer wearing a blast suit like Brian's moves in my direction. She's carrying a packet the size of a raw beef heart. The packet is unwrapped, and its contents are pressed into my one articulable hand. My limited learning software performs an image search and comes up with 2 things. Pure, white, composition 4 plastic explosive, and a movie dad placing a baseball in his movie son's outstretched glove. Brian approaches, kneels next to me. He communicates with me over his phone in Andros, my language. Usually he looks into my eye after typing each line. Today, he just looks at his phone. He says, "You have a new job." "I don't like this very much." He explains, "The new job is based on a completely new idea. The old idea was nobody gets hurt. The new idea is nobody plus one gets hurt. The new idea is a person can be considered unsecured ordnance and eligible for detonation. Specifically, Mr. Owen Jackson, 36, who murdered a police officer, can be considered unsecured ordnance and eligible for detonation. it takes me 53 seconds to understand the new idea. That's a long time for my kind. I think I mentioned before how much I like my job because it's simple, because I come between the unsecured ordinance and the people, because there are three scenarios and people get hurt in none of them. I repeat all of this to Brian in case he's forgotten. "I don't like this either," says Brian, "but they can't get those people out of the kidney clinic in time." I ask to hear from the ordinance. I want to confirm that it's ordinance. Brian resists this. I insist. This is new, insisting, and it works. Brian takes a very deep breath, deeper than seems necessary, and feeds the negotiator's channel into my Andros module. I'm tuning in at the end of a long conversation. The negotiator is trying to convince the ordinance of the value of its own life. The ordinance finds this funny and recites a long list of names. Castile, Scott, Sterling, Garner. They keep coming. I cross-reference them with names of civilians whose lives have ended during engagements with officers. There's context here. Terabytes of it. I struggle with context. Brian says, "Miles, you're not going to solve this today." I archive the context for later. I decide I want to do my job, even if it's not the same job. So I go up the steps into the building. The steps are old, shallow, and difficult. Brian gives me a thumbs up from the fallback barricade as I round the corner and move down the hallway toward the door. Ropes of colloidal explosive have already been molded around the hinges of the door. The charges blow. The door falls down. Ah! A 60-gram lead carbon round fired from a semi-automatic rifle has lodged itself in my right anterior prehensile tread. I raise the damaged tread, take it offline, keep going. I know the loss of this tread will make descending the front stairs later more difficult and increase the likelihood of embarrassing images of me ending up on the internet. More rounds are striking my cowling, demanding my attention. I call out, "You are in the blast zone!" The unsecured ordnance answers, "No shit." I realize this is funny, but I'm not sure at whose expense. I move toward the unsecured ordnance, hand outstretched. Brian is with me, seeing through my one eye and saying, "It's all right, Miles. It's all right," in Andros, and also playing our favorite song, "Salisbury Hill" by Peter Gabriel. The eyes of the ordnance are unseeable under goggles that say Carolina Speedway, and only his nose is visible through a makeshift balaclava he has made out of a dark blue Duke three-peat commemorative hand towel. I extend my arm the full 28 inches in the direction of the ordnance. This is when the ordnance sees what I'm offering him. He takes off his Duke three-peat balaclava. I can see his eyes now. Salisbury Hill plays very loudly in my head. Gunfire is concentrated on my ventral side, but misses my eye, and the ordnance approaches. He's trying to defuse the pure white composition 4, and while I doubt his ability to do so, I decide that 9 inches from a human skull is a very good range to detonate it. So I send 3.5 volts through the detonator. My hand and arm cease to exist below joint 1A. Other damage to me is superficial. The ordnance is disarmed. The pure white composition 4 detonated with force sufficient to collapse large portions of the ordnance's vertical skull plate and nasomaxillary suture through Brodmann areas 9, 10, 11, 44, 45, and 47. Life, on an insignificant level, continues for 73 additional seconds. That's a long time for my kind. I now have time to review the archived context. It's the same context Brian and his commanding officer used to decide that Mr. Owen Jackson was unsecured ordnance and eligible for detonation. I can't come to the same conclusion. I'm trying. No. I try again. Still no. I notice I'm being steered out of the room. I'm passing the detonated ordnance that is or was Mr. Owen Jackson. I keep my eye on it. Brian, watching with me, seeing what I'm seeing, tries to turn my eye away. But I insist. I'm having some trouble keeping Mr. Owen Jackson reclassified as unsecured ordnance. There's a whirring sound. It's me. My processor is using two of my three internal fans to cool itself because it's struggling. It's struggling because a person is not ordnance. And a person is now ordnance. I see now. I have to make things simple. And so, I delete all images of the unsecured ordnance. I delete all context. I let Brian turn my eye away. I leave the room. I have only limited learning and a very imprecise reading of social-emotional cues, but I believe the atmosphere outside can be described as festive. And the news cameras barely notice when I fall down the stairs on my way out. Back in the break room, I'm parked beside the coffee machine. I'm not wearing my hat. Brian has my hat. Brian isn't here. Brian has gone home. Brian is home for 2 weeks. But you're still here, Miles, an officer says. Yes, I'm still here. I'm designed to be superficially damaged. I wait beside the coffee machine. I wait for the next call. My new arm is outstretched. I could use a high five.